Welcome, welcome, coaches, teachers, parents, and medical professionals. You are listening to Larissa Mills and my podcast, At the Table. I am the founder of iParentGen.com. And today and every day, we are going to discuss how families and schools are managing technology and raising children and teaching them. We are also going to listen to how technology is impacting athletes and their level of sport. So let's get to it. Stay tuned and please call in with your questions or join us on Facebook or follow us on Instagram. But parents, you are not alone. There are courses, articles, and videos on my website. Please sign up for free. So let's get listening.
Hello there, Miss Ellen Gottlieb. How are you?
Good afternoon. I'm great because I'm with you. What a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, I think we're starting off on the wrong foot because we're not in the same city.
but virtual connects us. Connection,
I know,
is connection,
but
right?
I love where you live.
Yeah,
I really did. I liked New York. I liked visiting, and we were trying to get over there to Long Island, but we didn't. I literally would get up to the ferry because we wanted to go see even the Statue of Liberty. I checked up all my boxes of where I wanted to take my daughter. We missed the ferry by like 10 minutes. It was like going. And I went,
That's life coming at you.
And then we found this beautiful, it's called the Dock or something down in New York, yeah, right down by
it's my daughter lives down there. It's quite beautiful.
It was a nice restaurant, and everyone basically had their rosés and their dogs out there on a Sunday.
On the pier. Yes, it's lovely. Lovely.
Yeah, good. I really like it.
Come again and visit. I would love that.
Yeah. Well, so I have Ellen Gottlieb here, who is an author and a lawyer, but we're talking about your conscious parenting book that you've written, How to Raise a Parent. And I think it's important to realize too about being a conscious parent, because if we're not conscious about what we're doing, about what we're saying, we're not connecting with our kids, and we're not going to have that really meaningful relationship that we want. That's what I got out of your book. I hope that's what I was supposed to get out of your book.
It's perfect. Absolutely.
Now, Ellen, you are an attorney. You're a certified conscious parenting coach. You are meeting and chatting with individuals and parents and kids, and you're trying to help them lead their best life. That's fantastic. Now, can you share a little bit with us about why you wrote the book and how it started? Because it sounds like you wrote the book before you became a conscious parent coach, right?
Well, it was sort of simultaneous, actually. But I've spent 20 years studying in the field of conscious parenting, because when my daughters, who are now 26 and 28, were young in elementary school, I noticed that they just weren't as happy as they should be. And the peer situations were becoming challenging. Yeah. And I said to myself, I know I love them, right? It's never about love. We all love. Sometimes we can almost love too much, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where our ego gets triggered. But I knew that there was something I didn't know. So I didn't even know what I didn't know. And I decided to set out on a journey and figure it out. And I came across Dr. Shefali, who became a dear friend of mine. And we talked for years and years. And then she, you know, got involved with Oprah. And I read the books and took courses. And there I was coaching all my friends. So I decided at a certain point in my life, I would make it an actual business called Enlightened Parenting. And that's when I started also to put it down in a book. And the book was motivated because I've read a lot of books, and there are a lot of great material out there, but I wanted a book that I knew would reach me. And if it would reach me and speak to me, hopefully it would speak to other parents. So I didn't want to just give lessons. I wanted to illuminate the lessons with vignettes. So each—
Which I really like. I really like
almost all the lessons, as I was saying to you, have stories, because through stories, we store memory and lessons, and we learn how to apply some conscious lessons. You know, you were saying when we started about, we all think we're conscious and we all think we're connected to our kids, right? But this is a different level of consciousness. This is a consciousness level where we look inward, where we recognize that our childhood patterns are actually driving the boat. So we're not really free.
People don't really
realize that. You don't even know it, right? Because you're in it. So the work is to start to see it. And then as you can see your patterns, you can begin to separate from them. And then you connect in a new way. You don't connect in a conditional way. See, most parents and children are certainly connected, but they don't recognize the transactional nature
right.
of that connectivity.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point of this work, is to let go of the conditioned habits, the expectations, the agenda, and the fantasy that we have.
Right. You know, all those sort of childhood ideologies of what it would be like. Right. I think that that's a big part of it too. Realizing
it's mired in ego, right?
Right. And, you know, when I go through the processes of helping parent, the number of parents that actually place their own wishes and their own goals on their children still floors me. Right. So if they're saying, for instance, what are the goals in your relationship with your child? And they're like, well, I want them to get A's and I want them to be happy and I want them to be successful. And I went, no, your relationship with your children. What goals do you want in your relationship with your children? You just told me how you want them to be.
Ah, beautiful.
Right.
That's a great distinction. Right. But that is what their goals are. That's the problem.
Yeah. And that scares me, right? Like that, sorry, I lost my pen. I was like looking everywhere for my pen. It kind of destroys me a little when I see parents that are like that.
Well, it destroys you because you know it's destroying their children.
It just
That's why it hurts you, because you know that that child is going to suffer from the parents wanting. It's in that wanting that we get really stuck. And why do we want for our children? Because we don't have it for ourselves. So we're in a state of lack. And so we want this child to be the trophy. Make me look good. So I often tell parents, could you start parenting as though your child is the neighbor's kid? Because then your ego isn't so invested.
Yes.
The neighbor's kid can get a C and the world won't end. But when your child gets the C, it feels so traumatic. And then there's so much drama.
Mm-hmm.
So when they lose the sweater, get the bad grade, or, you know, don't make the team, can we allow that without all this trigger of our own ego? And we can, unless we wake up. And that's what this work is about. It's about becoming enlightened, becoming awakened to ourselves, which is why I called the book How to Raise a Parent.
And it's great, because even if you are already a great parent and you're pretty attuned, it does offer you insightful strategies, I found.
Oh, great. Yeah, I really tried to make it chock full of stuff to meet all kinds of needs.
Yeah. Now, I'm so glad that we could manage this hour together. And don't worry, I won't hold you to the hour.
I'm here for as long as we can. I'm delighted to be here.
So we are seeing in mental health, and I'm going to come from this standpoint, we are seeing alarm bells from doctors, psychiatrists, family physicians, emergency physicians, psychotherapists, psychologists, coaches, sports. We are seeing a larger mathematical stat or of alarm bells looking at us, because kids are misbehaving at a point, or are rude, or have mental health issues now, to the point where our healthcare system, our psychologists, our psychiatrists can't see them for 2 years. That's troubling. The doctors are very worried for the next 10 years. And this doesn't even include COVID, Ellen. Like, honestly,
right?
If we just take COVID out, we were still going there.
Right. So why?
How will your book help those parents who are really trying to parent better to help their children and prevent mental health?
So my point was that when we see untoward behavior, disrespect, or sadness, or, you know, shutting down or acting out, it's a signal. You know, it isn't being done to us because it's a bad kid. There is no bad kid. There's a kid who is suffering.
Yeah.
And so if we could recognize the behavior, the untoward behavior, as a message to the parent that this child is suffering and needs something different. What does the child need? They always need connection, but in a new way. It's about connecting. And, you know, I just dealt with a family and they're so angry because their 10-year-old is disrespectful and won't listen. But she's actually screaming and she's actually complying, which is what's most interesting.
Hmm.
When I tease things apart and deconstruct with families, they're actually, the children's behavior mirrors the parents' patterns. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're acting out in ways that sometimes the parents either did as a child or wish they could. There were labels in families like the good kid and the bad kid, and all of this has to be deconstructed. And that's what I do individually with families is show them.
Or could it not just be the parent doesn't know how to give children the sense of, we all have to be teaching our kids self-talk. We all have to be giving them coping mechanisms, confidence, making sure that we are their secure landing mat. If we're not giving our children those tools before the, you know, the magical age between 8 and 10, where children form their bond of security attachment to an adult, doesn't have to be the parent. It's got to be with someone though, someone that loves them and gives them that security. They are going to have a really hard time in the future having relationships with other people and not seeing any unwanted behavior. And that alarms me when I don't hear and see parents are like, what's self-talk, you know, or what is resilience? What is management tools? Like, what are you going to use in your toolbox to manage this situation right now? Right. They just don't have those weapons in their arsenal. And it's almost like you're kind of filling that arsenal up with a little bit of strategies for them to use. Because I think they're stuck on actual dialogue, perhaps, maybe, or intent and content to give their kids. They don't know.
Right. So what you're saying to give is sort of the inverse of what parents are giving. They're giving anxiety and depression because they're giving an outcome-based model. Do this and I will be happy and you will be happy because you will have success, right? And it's outcome-based. That grade is now going to define you. And children are confused because, you know, they have independent spirit and they don't feel so connected to the grade until the parent does, until the culture does, right? It's not just the parent, it's the whole culture. Yeah. And then there's the envious parent whose kid can't do it and now they're in more lack. So what you're saying to give is not what parents are giving. And that's what the book was intending to do, was parents take a new look. In other words, it's like seeing your role as parent through a new lens. Sometimes it's called the third eye. Like, let's look differently. What are we doing? What was done to me that has caused me to do this in a way that's unconscious? But you don't even know you're unconscious. So it's hard.
So when do we see the alarm bells of a parent who's not... Well, we know what they are, but how does a parent wake up to see that it is them, right?
Well, the parent has to start to learn that their child's behavior is not because it's a bad kid, a lazy kid, you know, a dishonest kid. Sometimes if the kid is lying, well, the parent goes, I have a kid who's a liar. You don't have a kid who's a liar. You have a kid whose behavior is dishonest because they've learned to be dishonest. Now tell me about your childhood. Yeah. How dishonest were you? And inevitably, they tell me they were sneaking around all the time.
Yeah.
You know, so let's not label. That's really critical. Let's not give, because they'll live up to the label, right? When you fear that your child is going to be lazy, maybe you had a lazy parent.
Right.
Your child will be lazy. What you fear, they will manifest. So we need to dissolve your fear. How do you dissolve the fear? You start to look inward and you stop looking outward at your child to meet your needs. Mm-hmm. See, that's the key. We want them to make us feel good. That is not their job.
Nope, not at all. They don't come out pre-programmed, parents. They don't come out knowing anything. And it's our job to give them all of the knowledge and all of the social skills, teach them empathy, virtue, morals. And I'm finding that it's almost like, and we just had this conversation about phone time. If kids and parents are on their phones for 160 hours a month, that's a full-time job. Yeah. Where are they talking? When are they laughing? When are they sharing? When are they growing, learning, shaping? I'm seeing us at a stall of learning and growing. Right.
And connect, because what they're not doing is connecting. I mean,
if you can't be in the same room without a device, you're not even remotely connecting. And a lot of our etiquette courses teach the kids how to, you know, turn off your phone, look at the whites of the eyes, shut down your laptop when someone comes into a room, hello, acknowledge them. Even if it's perfunctory, do it anyway. It is manners.
Right. Basic. These are basic skills.
Executive functioning skills I'm seeing. And Absolutely. Teachers are noticing kids by the age of 4. Who have and this is just a awe-inspiring stat, kids have never seen Plato by the age of 4 because their parents only let them watch it on YouTube and don't want to clean it up. We're seeing this and hearing about it a little bit more. That I loved getting my hands in Plato and making stuff. And, you know, my parents, we're not saying to always play with your kid and do everything with your kid, but let them play. Yeah, you're going to see a mess, but it's almost like parents just don't want to have that play anymore because they know they're too tired to pick it up or too tired to clean it up.
I'm reminding parents, you know, this is a job. You brought these children into the world. And when you say to me,
I'm just under my eyes, clearly.
You have three, you're in the thick of it, you know, and parents say to me, like one family where there's some big tantrums, and the father said, you know, I'm really tired of this. And that's too bad because he's still tantruming. So let's work on how you're going to connect with him in the middle of a tantrum. How are we going to turn this ship? It's going to take some time, but there are tools. And one of the biggest tools is that we're going to connect in a new way. We're not going to resist the tantrum. We're not going to punish, ground, certainly never strike the child. Yeah. We're going to connect to the feeling beneath the tantrum. And we're going to teach him to tolerate the feeling because it's in teaching children about their feelings. That their feelings are temporary, that their feelings hurt, but they won't kill them, that feelings are neutral, that feelings definitely will pass, that they're safe, and that I'm willing to be in your feeling with you, like a wave in the ocean. That is a beautiful lesson. That's the lesson. And instead, we are almost substituting our parenting with devices. You know, you see it in restaurants.
Yes,
you
see that breaks my heart, too.
Their kids are on their iPads. You know, I've seen even babies in a high chair and the mother just texting the whole time and not even looking at her own
child. Oh, don't tell me those things. Those cripple me.
It's all the time, you know, where you're with your child, but you're not with your child, right? Because you're not interacting. So it's a crisis. And in this country, certainly, you see it on a global scale now, or a national, I shouldn't say global.
We do. Studying it is. Yeah.
This is all unconsciousness, what's going on in this country. And it's traumatizing to me. It's terrifying to me.
Yes.
And now we're in this binary right and wrong. You know, there is no right and wrong. There is no good and bad, success and failure. You can learn so much from losing the race.
Yeah.
As much, and you can enjoy winning. I'm not saying not to enjoy winning, but let's not make winning the goal. Let's make playing the goal.
We always talk about with our teams and with our kids, our own kids, you know, the goal is not perfection. The goal is more knowledge or more practice or more progress, and enjoy whatever sport it is that you've chosen. I never chose my kids' sports because I wanted them to choose their sports, because statistics say that they're more likely to go higher in their sports, right? But they're also going to be happier. Right. And there's
so the goal is meaning also. It's to create meaning, to create a sense of accomplishment, to create resilience.
Yep.
All of those things are created through the sports process, but it's created through the process, not the outcome. And that's where we get stuck as parents. We love when our kids win, but winning to me is not the goal.
Well, that's a bonus. Not too many teams we've been on really win a lot.
There you go. So you can be on the best team, right?
You can be on the best team and you can still lose, because that's, you know,
because it's all about teamwork, right? Because they're learning so much on the team, being on the team. And of course you want to improve your own personal sport and, you know, your progress, make progress in your own ability.
Progress means,
when parents also say to me, I just want my kids to do their best. An alarm bell goes off for me. Because if we both have daughters who are swimmers, you know, if you threw up at lunch or your teacher yelled at you or you didn't sleep well last night, you might not swim that your best that day might not be your best time. And that's okay, because in that moment, it was your process and what you did, and it was your best.
And the good thing is, you and I both know that there's a meet in another 3 weeks.
Correct.
Right? Let's look at this happened. So what? Like, when I remember I was little and I was not strong in math, and I'm the firstborn of three. Right. So my dad and mom had to figure everything out right with me. So I brought a test home and I don't know what happened. I think I failed it or I did really bad. And my dad's like, you just didn't get the concept. Let's just work on it. He didn't.
Wow.
He's like, no, I think it's the method you're using, but let's just do a couple practices and make sure that you've got the concept, because I think what they taught you was this type of math, and we're going to teach you how to multiply with this type of math. Okay. So he sat down, there was no yelling. He goes, yeah, I know many tests I failed. You're going to fail more, Larissa, and that's going to be okay, well, because that's part of growing up and learning where we're weak in, but you just, it's how you adapt to that failure, right? He just said, I had to pivot, see where I went wrong and improve. He didn't yell. There was no yelling. It was kind of laughing. He goes, oh, don't worry about it. We'll just work on it together.
That's right? A gift.
Your and that's father, what I pass on to my kids.
That's a gift. Right? That was a gift. That was better than any gift, any toy, any present, any experience he could have given you, was to release you from the shackles of attachment to an outcome, and to say it, and to say, oh, good. You see, there is a purpose to grades. It's just, do I understand the material?
Yeah.
And then when
he
grades
cared
are slipping,
about the material. My parents.
Yeah, when grades
educated.
Are slipping. So yeah. I tell parents, well, are grades slipping in every subject? Is it one subject? Is there, what's going on at school? Is there a social problem at school,
right,
that's maybe
exactly.
causing them to be upset? Or do they not understand this particular subject? Is it physics versus biology? Let's figure it out. As opposed to attaching to the number or the letter, which most parents do.
Never
so one of, one of the tools I use, which really surprises parents, because I live in a competitive area, I grew up in this area, is that I stopped reading report cards. I decided that they did not matter. That
no, they don't.
Card,
you and I are the same. I stopped too.
Yeah. Report cards were irrelevant to me. And the kids would come home and go, quick, let's read the report card. And I'd say, not interested. Because I don't care what some outside external person marked you as. Are you learning? What do you love? What do you not like? Tell me what you don't love.
Yeah.
So I think we've really gotten lost. And I think that's why this work of raising consciousness has almost become, you know, the most important. To me, it's the most important work you can do.
Yes.
And it scares a lot of people, though, because this is hard work to look inward and to recognize that the way you've been doing things is causing discord and trouble for your child.
Right.
That's painful for a parent.
Yeah, I mean, and I had to think about, for me, when I was reading it, it reminded me of sort of what I went through with my oldest years ago, like 10 years ago. I started to notice, she's not as outgoing. She's pretty reserved, pretty quiet. But I was parenting my kids, all three, the same. Like connecting. I like being outdoors. We're almost outdoors. We have a cottage. I want them to love nature and have empathy for animals. We're always going to zoos or out zoos and petting zoos. And I wanted them to connect it with the water, you know. And then I just kind of, I don't know, I started to notice that she was the shyer one, and I would almost get angry because she wasn't getting involved as much as I would get involved. Hmm. Right. So then I realized after a year, I'm like, wait a minute, maybe she's just introvert. She's introverted. She very much
That's
is.
She is.
She is. So you have to acknowledge. I'm like,
Absolutely.
What is going on? That's where I started this business, is because you have to realize that it's not you. You can't put your kid in a box, and you can't parent all three kids the same way.
Absolutely. So that's another part of the book, which is about attuning
yes.
to the child. So for example, if you know your child is very hesitant to try a new activity, a younger child, but that they eventually end up loving it, then you may have to be a little pushier, and you may have to say, look, I'm going to ask you to try it twice. If you know that your kid has an intuitive feeling, and if they don't want something, don't push it, then you don't push. You have to understand the child's nature, right? And attune to the child and discern, what does this child need in this moment, as opposed to what will make me feel
right.
calm. So that's where this work is so interesting, I find, and interesting, challenging, you know, and it's, you know, I made the ladder is on the front of my book, because the sort of a theme that you climb
it's,
up and then you
yeah.
fall down again. And it's okay to fall. I love setbacks. Setbacks are new platforms for greater growth, because
right.
it requires
or broader growth. Growth too. I
and,
found
right,
that
broader
I
growth
I needed
and allows
a broader
you
depth of how to parent.
Yeah,
I'm used to parenting this. and I was raised from, you know, two great people, and their way wasn't working for this one. Right?
Right.
But I still have the tools of patience, kindness, connection. But then we started butting heads a bit, and I'm like, I don't like this. This is not the relationship I want. And so we changed. It was like a switch of no yelling.
Yeah, there is literally no place or time to yell, ever, ever. And if we I've read some interesting books on it. If we look back at other cultures, they will never yell. You just spilled, you know, coffee on the white carpet. We'll clean the carpet.
An accident.
We'll clean the carpet. There is literally, now that doesn't mean there isn't a place for a strong boundary or maybe, you know, if a kid is about to cross a big street alone and they're too young, you raise your voice and you say, stop.
Those are obvious.
You say,
stop.
Yeah. Obvious safety, education, hygiene, you know, respect. There are some basic essential boundaries that I talk about in the book. Most of our boundaries, though, most of the rules we impose don't even have a reason. It's a because I said so, because it was done to me. And those are the kinds of rules that we really have to reassess. So there's no place for yelling ever. And that shocks parents. There is no place for a timeout. And I give this example, you know, on these timeouts, because we forget that children are people. If you were in a meeting, you know, I practice law. If I was in a meeting with all my colleagues and I raised my hand and I made a mistake, I said something, I gave a wrong answer. And my boss said, Ellen, go sit in the corner, turn your back and sit in the corner. You're getting a timeout. Now, obviously, it sounds ludicrous, but I use the example among grownups to show you that how angry the child feels when they're stuck in a corner. If the child has untoward behavior, they need greater connection. Now, if they're biting kids in the sandbox, you don't say, oh, go have a few more bites.
That's a whole other different thing, right?
Right. But you don't go, oh, go bite. Now bite little Joey. Of course not. It means you take your kid on your lap and you teach very few words, no biting. It doesn't, again, we have to leave now because then they have a tantrum and you stay calm, but no need for yelling, no need for screaming. That's obviously a very young child. Mm. There are so many issues and examples as kids get older and older. There is no place for timeouts, even grounding. Kid comes home, you know, the teenager with, you know, alcohol on his breath. You ground the kid, they'll sneak. You're grounding them. Your punishment is not going to stop and interrupt the behavior. We want to disrupt the behavior. So what
now,
are we
how,
find
here's
out
one of my questions that is from your book about that, about discipline versus punishment, because we know that children on the age of, I believe you're 21, here it's 18, can't drink. So say your teenager does come home, they've drank in way too much to the point where it's almost making them ill. This is not, let's say it's the seventh time. You've given them lots of natural consequences. What would a parent, or what could a parent do to work with that scenario? Because obviously the person's drinking for a reason. They're trying to escape something, right?
And fit in.
Or fit in.
And there are so many reasons.
Because grounding won't work, but you definitely have to have a talk. You definitely have to sit down. You definitely have to go over the dangers. You definitely have to do that. But disciplining, you know, like
doesn't
you're
work.
Getting to a danger mode, you know?
Right. So you're talking about safety, both health and safety in terms of driving and wellness. You're talking about a very important subject. So the first thing I tell the parent to do is notice your own fear. Notice what's triggered in you by this pattern in your child. You are now in fear. When we're in fear, what does fear trigger? A need for control. That's why we punish. That's why we ground, because we think if you're in my house, if I ground you and you're in my house, you're safe. They'll sneak out. They'll do it right the minute they're not. Yep. You can't ground forever. You got to let them out in the world again.
Yep.
So once you sit with your fear, notice I am in panic. I am in terror. I am angry. Mm-hmm. My child's not listening. Mm-hmm. Where is the disconnect? Now you do have to figure out. So the drinking is the behavior on the tip of the iceberg, and beneath the water, that's where the drinking is all beginning. Those are the emotions. Now you have to find out by connecting with your child, what's prompting and motivating this behavior. Why are they making that choice in all of those situations? And often they'll say, well, everyone's doing it. I hear this. Everyone's doing it, mom. And I don't want to be the odd man out. There's all kinds of reasons. You can't begin to implement a strategy with your child until you understand what is motivating the behavior. And that takes connection without judgment.
Yep. And that
so
takes
if you're
years
going to judge,
parents will realize it's previous to that, right? It's how you've given them up to that.
Exactly. So, right. And, you know, and then you work on strategies. And you also have to tell your child, and most parents know this, like if they need a ride and they're inebriated, they have to know they can call you and that there will be no consequence. Because if you pick them up and then you can't give them a consequence or a real punishment, next time they won't call you.
Yep. And so, it's funny you say that because we had a series of young girls here at the university who were given the date rape drug, roofied.
Oh,
a number of them. Do you know how many people, I wonder how many of those children called their parents for a ride home? Because they were from off campus, so not on the campus and had to get a ride home. I'm wondering how many parents came to pick those kids up because they weren't all 21.
Right.
Right. And it's a danger. Right. So it's
well,
how you train and
that's
educate
a crime. Them. That's a crime because that's done to them.
Yeah. I'm just saying when you get to that point, you should have thought back, you know, 3 or 4 years prior. Okay, here's what we do when you're in this situation. If this happens to you, call me, I'll come. But if you always are yelling or criticizing your children, they will not come to you with anything.
Never.
They will start resenting you. They will start restraining and they will start distancing themselves from you. But I think it's about, like I told my one daughter, I said, if you're ever at a party, text me a password. And then we have a family password. If it comes up, then I know to go and get her, right?
Yes, and the parent needs to be willing to be the heavy. You don't have to be liked by your kids' friends. That is not your job.
Yeah.
Your job is not to be the cool mom who provides the alcohol. You know, I know moms like this. I'm the cool mom and they love me. I don't need to be loved by my children's friends. Respected would be nice, but the way they feel about me is not the issue. So we always had like, you know, just like you say, a password, like I have a headache meant or... And I text back and say, you need to come home now. And I'm the heavy. I'm happy to be the heavy. You want to go? I'm saying no, sorry. You can't be. And of course I'm saving and protecting the child and trying to let the child save face. It's the teenager who wants to save face with their friends.
Yep.
So, but a lot of these teens are hurting. A lot of this alcohol, Larissa, is because there's so much pain by the time they get to their teenage years. They've been so judged and criticized. If parents would recognize in the younger years that every time you yell, you shame, you blame, you criticize over the smallest or the largest infraction, you are wounding that child. You know, parents go, I don't like that shirt with those pants.
Yeah, I know.
You know what's the difference, especially with the younger ones, or they don't want to eat the meal you made, and we go at them and we shame and we criticize and the parents say, I'm teaching. You're not teaching, you're wounding. We clip their wings. If parents could see these wounds as bruises on their bodies, they'd stop, but they don't see them because these are soulful wounds. Yep. And then we tell these kids who've been wounded, now don't drink. Now you're 15, get me good grades, be a top captain of the team. Oh, play an instrument. A couple of languages would be nice. Be popular, be friendly. You know, we've wounded these kids. They have no self-esteem. And now we're imposing all these pressures.
Would you not? But I think in being, you know what I do with the phones, children under the age of 14 can't even think abstractly, can't even think about what an image looks like on social media and how social media has completely, I think I even want to use the word attacked our children's childhood innocence, because they're seeing pictures, images, videos, and comments that they shouldn't really know until they're 18 or 16. And they're seeing it at 8, 9, 10 and being bullied online 24 hours. And then they go to school. You can't escape your bullies anymore.
You can't escape
issues anymore because they're there. Every minute they pick up their phone, they can't get breaks.
No, it's
so I think that's causing a lot of the increased anxiety. I mean, we know that dopamine and cortisol are jacking up the phone use, right? That's worse than cocaine or sugar. So we know that's a large issue of why they want to be on their phone. And then they're on the social media and their heart rates go up. and they're making comments and they don't want to miss anything. And these kids are staying up till 12. So we're actually creating a really unhealthy generation.
We are. We are. And the other, so there are some statistics too about 90% of boys, adolescent boys, are watching pornography regularly, hardcore pornography.
I think it's between 12 and 17. I just had an expert
I heard 12
on.
To 15. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, the highest ever rate.
Right. So what
ever.
Are we teaching? And they're not doing it once. They're doing it regularly. What are we teaching about expectations? What are we teaching about bodies? What are we teaching about sexuality?
Intimacy?
What
love?
Are we teaching about connection, about yeah. relationships? About meaning. We're,
yeah.
It's horrible. So what's the antidote? A strong family. A family where we
connect.
That's the antidote. Connection through family, where yeah. the child is unconditionally accepted, loved, without blame, without shame. Whatever they do is okay. Whatever choices they make, as long as they're safe, whatever grades they get, they're on a team, they're not on a team.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be good enough. And for there are many children suffering with social issues too now.
Yes, a lot. And eating disorders.
And eating disorders. I've had parents say my kid doesn't know how to socialize. It's just too fast for them. You know what I tell them? Then make having friends less important. If your kid can't
or make
right
your
now,
house the place to hang out.
Make your home the space, have the snacks.
That's what we do.
I always made my house. You want friends? It's always here. Week after week.
That's ours.
Here. And the other parents love it because they
at your house.
Have good babysitting. They know that their kids are safe and well fed.
Yeah.
And so it was, I didn't mind. Those are wonderful memories. But
yes.
if your child isn't connecting, then you have to, with other kids, then that has to not matter. Then you can't. The parent who's disappointed in the child now makes the child disappointed in themselves. Remember, I think one of the most important quotes is that when we wound our children, when we blame and shame and criticize them, they don't love us less. They love themselves less.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we use that in sports with criticizing. Like, there's a certain level in sports that we use because at under age 12, you have to give 90% good feedback, right? Like constructive good feedback. But when they're this age, they don't understand all the different plays in hockey or football or basketball or whatever they're doing. So try and keep your comments 90% positive, good, constructive, and 10% if you're going to be negative, do it in a constructive way because you don't want them to fall off the wagon. And this isn't just in sports. This is in drama. This is in dance. This is in arts. This is in their hobbies. We're trying to, in Europe, they back end their healthcare system by funding their education by hiring teachers and coaches and people to run programs in the school so that kids have a mandatory activity to do after school every day to stay healthy and active and social. That is astounding to me. Like Finland does a great job of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And we don't look what we do to families in terms of childcare alone. I mean, our childcare, I struggled tremendously with childcare issues when the kids were little.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to have two working families. Your boss doesn't want to hear it, you know, and it's funny. I had this experience, you know, you're in a meeting as the woman and your kid has 104 fever and you want to run out, you know, you're kind of frowned upon. But when the man says, I'm going to my kid's game, he's the greatest parent ever.
I know. I don't like that double-edged sword.
You know, let's lighten up on our mothers and on our dads. Let's honor the family. You want to have workers who are capable in the next generation? Honor the family.
You're going to have to let them leave a lot because they're going to have to take them to their therapy appointments.
Or their pediatricians and let them be at their sports games and work remotely when possible. So there's so many things that we can do, but nothing's going to happen if we don't raise consciousness. And I'm talking not about, you know, I'm really real consciousness, really looking within. What am I doing to cause a problem? How am I co-creating the misery that I'm seeing in my family or in the world or in my team at work? So,
yeah. Now, we talked about this just a few minutes just before we started filming. And we talked about that it's so easy for parents today to buy their children material things because we think that's what makes them happy. And you said what? Do you remember?
The greatest gift. I don't remember how I put it, but Yeah. The material stuff is not the gift. The material stuff is the exchange for not giving them the time and the attention. I said, we had these kids to attend to them, to be present with them. Mm-hmm. And here we are trying to buy them off and not giving them the connection that they need.
Yeah. Right? I mean, it's so easy now. Parents just buy all the tech, all the clothes, all the food, all the sports. We call it the servicing out parent, service out for tutor, service out for this, but I'm like, you service out for therapy, but it's still the same problem when that child's with that parent, because the parent isn't working with the relationship with the child.
Yes.
Right. You
it's
need
the parent's job.
Right.
We had these children purposefully. And even if it was not purposeful, we brought them into the world. They are here. They are ours. And they need a conscious approach if we're going to co-create a situation where the child can thrive. Do you want your child to thrive? Then you have to put the work in now. And that work is not handing them stuff. It isn't the best iPad or iPhone or the latest version of anything.
Or hockey sticks or clothing or shoes or the best coat.
Exactly.
Right?
It's always connection. Now, this doesn't mean if there's a fad in school, and there always is, I would say to my children, well, do you like it? Like at one point, these North Face jackets were the big thing, or the UGG boots. I never said, you can't have it. It was, let's talk about it. Do you think it's pretty? Well, they looked at me and they go, those UGG boots are ugly. I go, well, then we'll skip that fad.
Yeah.
I thought they were ugly and bad for your feet. They're like wearing bedroom slippers. So
that's what I said. I said, they look like big brown slippers.
So we'll skip that. And we skipped that because that, you know,
that was their choice. We let them choose.
Choice. Exactly. So that's connection. So I'm always trying to get beneath the behavior. If you have an untoward behavior, be curious instead of angry. That's the key. The behavior is untoward. They're disrespectful. I'm not saying to say, thank you for being rude to me. You can say to your teenager, I can see from your tone, you're angry. Let's disconnect for 10 minutes. And then we're going to talk. Let's separate a few minutes. And then I want to find out what's bothering you. Instead
that's
of don't talk to me that way. I won't be spoken to. I'm the parent. You're the child. That's authoritarian. No, let's walk this path together.
Yeah.
It's not authoritarian. They have a lot to teach us, more than we have to teach them.
And
but
they
we
don't
lose
know
sight of them.
Now, my last question, because I got to kind of wrap up here. There was a quote in your book or question. You said resilience is a critical life skill that can be best learned when the parent gets out of the child's way. Resilience is an outgrowth of emotional tolerance. Can you explain that statement so our parents can understand that? Because that is profound to me.
Okay. Well, I think it goes back to what we talked about, which is that parents can't tolerate when their children don't succeed, win, get the trophy, the highest grade. You know, they parents, we are so busy trying to fix, rescue, and protect and pave the road. And we don't teach resilience when we pave the road. In fact, we teach paralysis.
Paralysis. That's exactly.
When we fix everything, then when life comes at them,
they can't
have. They have no ability to juggle, to be logical, to think through the problem, to trust themselves that they'll get through it. So get out of their way. That doesn't mean ignore them. It means be the container. Allow them to experience their experience. Let them feel their feelings. Don't try to stop their feelings, even when you don't like the feeling. When they're angry, frustrated, disappointed, mad, jealous, let them feel jealous and angry. Don't interrupt it. And try not to fix everything. You know, the kid fails the test. Don't call the teacher and go, I want another shot at this. Or can they have extra credit? That's it. It's failed. Now let's figure out what the next step is.
Yeah.
And the next step. And why did you fail? Do you not understand? Did you forget there was a test? And what are your solutions? So I'm not saying to back off and not be the parent. It's more about being a guide, being a coach. That's why I love coaching, because I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to guide. You can choose to take some of these ideas or not.
Yeah.
And the parent needs to be a guide, but also to get out of their children's way and allow them to experience life in all its muckiness and all its pleasure and all its failure and success, and to cope. That's what resilience to me really is.
Yes, resilience.
I know you.
Yeah. Now, we have to wrap up here, but I was hoping you could give me or leave our listeners from your book or from your coaching three tips or strategies to help connect with your children and raise more conscious children. How about that?
Sure. I'll be just happy three. To give you what I consider really the top of my list. The
I'd
first
say three.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's go.
Okay.
For three.
The first one is non-reactivity. If you get nothing else out of this or anything you listen to from conscious parenting coaches, it's to stop reacting to your child. That means the yelling, the blaming, the shaming. Why did you do that? It literally has to stop. Stop all reaction. Tune inward. No, doesn't mean you won't feel angry and be triggered, but you sit with your trigger. And notice it and allow it to be processed within you, but don't dump it on your child. So non-reactivity is at the top of my list. Another one is to be very cautious not to do what I call as a lawyer cross-examination. So the big key is open-ended questions. Be curious, but don't push. They get in the car after the day at school. You don't even certainly, how was your day is better than, did you have a great day? Because you're saying to them, I want you to have had a great day. But what if you don't say anything? What if you wait till later in the day when they're ready to talk and process? What if you just said to your child, this is the best time of my day because you're home.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy you're home, you know, and the other, you know, there's so many wonderful tools. Certainly engagement in teams and drama clubs is wonderful for teenagers. The other thing though, just between parent and child, I guess my third one would be, is always connection. And that means without phones and without devices, even if there's no words, tell your child, I want time with you. Can we play a board game? Can we just take a walk together? Yep. Make time to connect.
30
in a
minutes,
new way.
20 minutes. Playing, I think we played during the pandemic, I think we played, you know, the game President Cards, like it's like a card game. So, yeah. Oh my gosh, I think we calculated, we played that almost 300, 400 times.
Yeah, but you connect, that's
and they
that's
liked
beautiful.
It because they got to call me the bum at the, because you're president, vice president, right. There's all these different levels. Mom,
right.
You're the bum. I'm like, yeah, I guess. Like, you know,
but you know what you said to them? You
connected.
Said to them, you matter. You matter enough that I want to be with you and mm-hmm. play this game over and over just because you matter to me. Now, our friends matter. We let our friends know they matter. We want to be with them. We plan, we schedule. So non-reactivity and certainly connection and open-ended sort of curiosity as opposed to cross-examination, you know, are some of the top. Yeah. And then of course, I'm going to go to number four, allow them to have their emotions, you know, tolerate. And the reason children don't learn to tolerate their emotions and parents can't tolerate what are conventionally called negative emotions in their children is because they haven't learned to process and tolerate their own feelings.
Exactly. Yeah.
So tolerate your sadness and let your kid have his feelings. So these are some of the top, you know.
I love them.
Big
They're great.
Tools. Okay, well,
and you know what's fascinating about this, Ellen, is that I've had maybe 30 or 40 guests on. I've interviewed 100 people for my book. And the top three strategies are almost always within a word or two of the same top three.
Interesting.
I think
I love
that there's a real connection when we have to say undistracted time together, communicate clearly, and book the time. And let your kid just learn and be and have their, those are the most common ones.
There you go.
See. And so I almost think that they're, I call them the golden strategies of parenting. Because if you put in a little bit of time every day, if you put in a little bit of that communication, if you get them to smile, if you hug them every day to have that release of oxytocin, so important. Right. And show them that you're their landing mat. And if we don't react to them when they come to us with every little thing and we show them problem solving capabilities, they're going to be up here in school. If
Absolutely.
We do those things
and
they're
in life
for them, than if right. we buy them 10 pairs of shoes or have them in the right schools or do whatever. It's all about our dialogue with our kids.
Absolutely. And let's make our homes safe havens and not prisons.
Right. I mean, never. That was something I think it's important to talk about even when you're getting married, but they don't think about that, right? You don't think about what are your value systems? how are you going to raise your kids before? I'm so glad that ours align pretty well, right? Because as you and I talked about separated families, those kids are at risk for higher levels of and exposure to mental health issues.
But they're only at risk because the parents' inner child voices are screaming because they're so hurt. If the parents could learn to put aside their egos and work with the other parent, there wouldn't be such high levels of risk in those children.
Completely agree. And we know that's the answer. We know it's the teamwork way out, right?
Right.
Right. Well,
I love what you prepared, by the way, what you talked about. I love it where two separate households have similar rules and values, the children are clear as to what the expectations are.
Very clear. Very clear. Well, thank you so much, Ellen, for sharing, talking, educating me. I love learning. I love being able to help parents have something else or another book or another podcast or something else that sort of is trying to help them get out of their rut right now. So this has just been lovely. And I hope that we can sort of work together in the future on a couple projects we talked about.
Yeah, it's such a treat. I'm just delighted to talk with you. I learned from you so much as well. And we will certainly keep the conversation going.
Now, one last question. How do people buy your book? Where did they find you?
Well, it's pretty easy. I have a website. It's right. There's a link right there. It's enlightenedparenting.co, not .com, CO for coach, or right on Amazon if you just plug it in. I made it affordable. If anyone is so inclined, a review on Amazon is always appreciated. And I'm hoping that that book helps parents out there in the world to find a little more connection and happiness in being with their child. That's my soulful desire.
It is. I think you've nailed it. I hope people.
Oh, thank you.
And if they need help, go to you to understand it and know how to practice it, because they can read it, but it's another thing to go and apply it, right?
It's hard. It's hard, but it can be done.
Right. I think it's certainly. Just, and sometimes parents just need a little bit of direction.
Sure. Some guidance. Golden, that's right? All. Coaching. Absolutely.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Stay
Hopefully
safe.
We
thank
can
you.
Do this again soon.
Absolutely. I'd love it. It was fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you.